Welcome back, Question Medicine 2021. This is Andrew Bill down here in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida. Another day, another dollar, another week, another podcast. You know the deal by now. We're going to get in what I'm getting on. We're talking about what I'm reading about. We're going to break down some articles. I really have nothing to say, nothing to interest you or interest me to speak about at the beginning of this. So let's just jump right into the episode, shall we? Without any further ado, without any hesitation, without any reservation, it is good to be back. All right, here we go. You are here to listen to articles. I'm here to talk about articles. So let's do this thing. Andrew Bilt, sunny St. Petersburg, Florida, 2021. Here we go. The first article is titled Association of Maternal Autoimmune Disease with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder in Children. This is in JAMA Pediatrics. And this paper does not say what the authors think that it says, or perhaps it does say it, and that is the problem with almost all studies that involve pregnancies. The author's conclusions were, in this cohort study, maternal autoimmune diseases were associated with increased ADHD among children. Wait, what? You mean autoimmune disorders in mom and then boom, big time risk of ADHD in the child that's born to that mom? Ooh, that is concerning. The reason it's concerning for me, the reason it stopped me dead in my track is because the better brain has celiac disease. Yep, the better brain has an autoimmune disorder. Does that mean that if we had children, this kid is going to be at a huge risk for ADHD? Ooh, I'm interested. I had to read on. It sparked my attention. So in this population-based cohort analysis of just over 800,000 infants and mothers, in the end, the researchers matched almost 13,000 children whose mothers had an autoimmune disease with approximately 50,000 children whose mothers did not have an autoimmune disease. And when they crunched through all the numbers, those individuals whose mothers did not have an autoimmune disease were diagnosed with ADHD about 5.5 cases per 1,000 boys and about 1.7 cases per 1,000 girls. But if your mom had an autoimmune disease, then your risk of ADHD, it shot up. It went crazy. It went from basically 5.5 in boys to 6.9 per 1,000. And it went from 1.7 in girls to 2.3 per 1,000. Yes, that's right. An extra case of ADHD for every 700 boys and an extra case of ADHD for every 2,000 girls. Multiple things about this study. First of all, not very impressed by the findings. This is a cohort study, so they're really just looking at a group of patients at a certain point of time and saying, hey, what can we find in the data here? And they found ADHD. Congratulations. I don't really think you deserve a cookie for that one. Maybe, just maybe, the mothers who have an autoimmune disorder are more likely to go to the doctor for their illness and thus more likely to take their child to the doctor, or mothers who have an autoimmune disorder are probably more likely to have health insurance for their medical condition and thus more likely, once again, to take their child to the doctor. After all, your child cannot be diagnosed with ADHD unless they go to the doctor to get the diagnosis of ADHD. Only people who go to the doctor for the diagnosis of ADHD either get or do not get the diagnosis of ADHD. I am sure, in fact, I'm 1,000% sure, there are many individuals out there that have ADHD and they would be diagnosed with ADHD if they went to the doctor. But because they never go to the doctor for one reason or another, they're never diagnosed with ADHD. And when you're looking at one per, I don't know, 700 or one per 2,000, this certainly could explain it. The other thing that I really like about this paper is that it is a perfect example of absolute and relative risk reduction, which is often misunderstood by most medical students, residents, and realistically even attending physicians. So let's try to break down these numbers into a way that you can understand absolute and relative reduction or absolute and relative risk. For easy numbers, we're going to look at the event rate of ADHD in girls. It was 1.7 per thousand for those individuals who did not have a mother with an autoimmune disorder, and the event rate went up to 2.3 cases of ADHD per thousand for those girls whose mother has an autoimmune disorder. The difference between 1.7 and 2.3 is basically 0.5. It's actually 0.6, but it's fine, 0.5. Thus, you could say that if you have a mother with an autoimmune disease, then there is a 0.5 per thousand increase rate of ADHD. And you would be completely correct. The numbers went from 1.7 to 2.3, and you could say there is 0.5 per thousand increase risk of ADHD. Or since 0.5 is about a third or 33% of 1.7, and I got that number by taking 0.5 divided by 1.7, I could potentially say that the relative risk, the relative harm, relatively speaking, is 33%. I could say that a mother with an autoimmune disorder increases your risk of having ADHD as a female child by 33%, relatively speaking. It's relative because the 0.5 is relative to the 1.7. 0.5 divided by 1.7. Where in absolute terms, the absolute difference between 1.7 and 2.3 is 0.5. So the absolute difference is 0.5 per thousand, but the relative difference is 33% increase. A 33% increase. And if you are a drug rep, if you are someone trying to pitch a drug, you better bet your bottom dollar you're always going to use a 33% increase. It's not lying. It's not being deceitful, because both statements are completely true. Both statements are exactly spot on. It's just on you as a provider to know which number the drug rep or the person or the lecturer or anyone that you're talking to is using, because there's a big difference between 0.5 per thousand and a 33% increase. If that 33% increase was going from, I don't know, let's say 66 per 100 up to 100 per 100, that's a big deal. But going from 1.7 to 2.3, that's really, maybe probably realistically not that big of a deal. Let me step down from my soapbox. Now, a reminder, the author's conclusions were, in this cohort study, maternal autoimmune diseases were associated with increased ADHD among children. So maybe this article does say what the authors think that it said, but unless you read the article, you might be tricked into thinking that this was a substantial finding and worth long debates and long discussions about with the patient sitting in front of you. And I would say probably not. One of the many problems with the pregnancy literature is the small, almost insignificant findings in most of the studies. You see, there actually was an increase, but that increase was so small. The reason being is that most pregnancies go off without a hitch. Most pregnancies don't have complications. Most pregnancies that are carried to term delivery are absolutely, positively 100% fine. So when you find even a small increase in the numbers, you can report it, regardless if the actual article or the actual finding is worth your time to know about or even think twice about. And so with that, let's move on to the next article. And the next article is the ultimate, yes, the ultimate questioning medicine article. It is titled, Effect of Discontinuing and Continuing Angiotensin Converting Enzyme Inhibitors and Angiotensin II Receptor Blockers on Days Alive and Out of Hospital in Patients Admitted with COVID-19, a Randomized Clinical Trial. Whew, holy smokes. This was in JAMA Network. And remember at the beginning of COVID, I did a podcast. Yes, you can go back and find it. And I talked about ACE inhibitors and ARBs. And I said, I'm still writing for them in the hospital. This belief comes from bad evidence. It comes from expert opinion. It's actually not even really evidence at all, because it just comes from an opinion piece, such as a piece written in the Journal of Hypertension back in May titled, can angiotensin receptor blocker drugs perhaps be harmful? And in there they said, look at this. Because of this mechanism of how it works on this this one thing over here inside the cell and then how COVID works and gets into the cell, we think yes, it is possible that just maybe you should stop people on their ACEs and ARBs. And from this little terrible evidence, from this little nugget or pearl of expert opinion that came in a journal, it took off like wildfire. And I will say, some individuals out there stopped ACE inhibitors on everyone. You make a little fancy drawing, a little explanation, and maybe a possible that could be mechanism, and many people, many providers fall victim and believe you. And this is why drug reps are so successful. For a majority of physicians, they don't actually have to prove any benefit or outcome. They just have to show you a bunch of fancy drawings and maybe use a few words with a few receptors that you have no idea of what they're talking about, and maybe a potential possible mechanism that could actually exist, maybe if the body followed all the rules of every textbook ever, and then boom, there you have it. Providers will believe you, and they just start following whatever you say. It's like you get them into a trance. Others of us out there question medicine and demand hard outcomes and appropriate clinical trials. Well, now we have our results. In this JAMA article, which is the first randomized controlled trial of roughly 650 patients hospitalized with mild to moderate COVID-19 who were either taking an ACE inhibitor or an angiotensin II receptor blocker, an ARB, on admission. On the admission, patients were then randomized to either discontinue or continue their ACE inhibitor or ARB. The primary outcome was the number of days alive and out of the hospital after 30 days. The secondary outcomes were death, cardiovascular death, and COVID-19 progression. And there was absolutely no difference, zero difference. I could read you the numbers, but it would just blur you with the final outcome, which was that there was no difference no matter how you sliced it, how you diced it, how you looked at it. It didn't matter if you continue the ACE inhibitor or ARB. There was no difference in any of the outcomes. So the bottom line here is continue the ACE inhibitor or the ARB when your patient is admitted to the hospital with mild to moderate COVID-19. And let's move on to the next article. This is going to be a short podcast, only three articles. So this next article is going to be the last article I'm going to talk about today, and I'll wrap this one up as I've wrapped up every single one before. The last article is titled Progression of Myopia in School-Aged Children After COVID-19 Home Confinement. This is in JAMA Ophthalmology. There are problems with COVID-19 we can't even see yet. And yes, that is a play on words since this article is all about seeing things. They have nothing to do. Some of these problems have nothing to do with COVID. They have nothing to do with even getting COVID, contracting COVID. They are problems that we are not even aware of just based on the fact that COVID exists. The social isolation is one of them. But another one is the concern whether home confinement for children may have a burden on the eyes. You see, less time outside equals less time playing and more time inside, likely in front of some sort of screen, whether that screen be a computer screen, a TV screen, or a tablet screen. So in this study, the author set out to find if the prevalence of myopia in school-aged children during COVID-19 was affected by this being inside more and being in front, likely in front of a screen more. The theory being that children are spending more time in front of screens and less time outside, and thus the eyes are not encouraged to grow and they're not looking at anything further than 2 feet in front of them. And if you don't have to look at anything further than 2 feet in front of you, then why would you develop to look at anything else? I mean, it's basic Darwin, if you will. If you are not encouraged to have to run to get your food, you're probably not going to run. You're going to just sit on the couch. If you're not encouraged to do something, you're probably not going to do it. And the eyeballs are no different. This study was based out of China. However, I think that the results are likely applicable everywhere. Maybe not to the same effect, but still certainly applicable. In this study, photo screenings have been performed annually on children in 10 elementary schools since 2015. This is usually over 100,000 children participating each year. And each year, the authors calculated the estimated prevalence of myopia. And in 2020, the rates of myopia status post COVID quarantine had drastic and scary changes. For 8-year-olds, the prevalence in previous years was around 27%, and after quarantine, it jumped up to 37%. For 7-year-olds, the prevalence was 16%, and it jumped up to 26%. For 6-year-olds, the prevalence used to be around 5.7%, and relatively speaking, it jumped up 400%, or in absolute terms, it jumped up to 21%. Either way, this is a scary finding. We may have a whole new generation of children that are nearsighted because they didn't get to go outside, look into a distance, and become farsighted. This substantial shift in myopia was not seen in any other year comparison. In the previous 5 years in which they were doing these screenings, it was all about the same. There was really no difference, and now we're having huge jumps. What does this mean, you may ask? What does this mean for the patient sitting in front of me? Or what does this mean for the child sitting in front of me? Well, I will be honest, I am not sure. I mean, sure, there is a change, but what does it mean? And the answer is, we don't totally know yet. We're not totally sure. But one of the things that we do know, one of the things we currently do know, is that 1 in 3 people with high myopia become severely visually impaired, mostly at a working age. So the potential health problems are astronomical. The potential health problems are really bad. This is not me saying we shouldn't have shut down at the beginning of COVID, but this is me saying that this is sad, and some problems from COVID we don't even realize we have yet or will have, because the COVID 19 pandemic is currently here, but likely the results or the repercussions of this will be with us for a long time to come. Much of the pandemic became a political issue, which only hurts the patient when medical clarity is clouded by political preference. And with that, let's wrap up before this ship sets sail in a sea of evidence. Here we go, a quick recap. If you have autoimmune disorder and you're a mother, well, then you should be concerned because your child's risk of ADHD skyrockets about one extra case per, 13,000 births of ADHD. The numbers are so small. The numbers are so ridiculous. I don't necessarily believe it. There's so many confounder factors here, but the only good thing about this article is that it is a really good article to stack away in your filing cabinet to discuss absolute and relative risk harms or absolute and relative risk reduction. This is a good way that you can show a student, you could show a resident, hey, look at this. This is a difference of 0.5 per thousand, or it's a 33% increase. Which one to you sounds worse? And hopefully that will be the light. That will be the light in their eyes that will say, oh, you mean when the drug reps say there's a 50% harm, that 50% actually isn't an absolute 50. It's just a relative 50. It's just a small little 50. And you can say, yes. So don't always believe what the drug reps tell you. And speaking of not believing what the drug reps tell you, or what you just may read in an opinion piece in the Journal of Hypertension way back in May, in the first randomized control trial of ACEs and ARBs for COVID-19, there was no difference in hospitalized patients. Go ahead and continue the ACE and ARB if your patient is admitted with mild to moderate COVID-19. And last but not least, COVID-19 has a real effect on children everywhere. And we may not realize all these effects yet, and maybe not until some 20 years down the line. In fact, it appears that children are inside more often and they're becoming nearsighted more often because they're not going out to play. The scary thing is that this increase, this drastic increase, is going up 400% in 6-year-olds, from 5% up to 21%. Those are scary numbers. And I don't know what it means for the long term, but it certainly means that we should be wary that there are going to be long-term effects of COVID-19 that have actually nothing to do with contracting COVID-19. And with that, I'll end this podcast as I've ended every one before it. Wait for the music. And until next time, keep the quest and questioning.